Morning. You have already been welcomed here, but I would also like to welcome you as well. I wasn't here in time for many of the songs. Missed that, but thank you, Phil, for those words. As it is a very beautiful passage of Scripture and very thought-provoking. We've been studying the parables, and in Matthew 13, I think we'll continue that today, maybe for today yet, then somebody else will be leading out in Bible study next week. So if you had any if you've been wearying of the topic, take fresh courage. It won't be long. And if there's something you've been waiting to say, holding your breath to say, you better speak today. There's if you have anything from previous parables that you'd like to talk about, I'd like to give you the opportunity to do that as well. At any time, don't be restricted by the presentation, I guess. So we've covered some of the parables up to Matthew chapter 13, we could have a volunteer to read verse 31 and 32, which is the parable of the mustard seed. And what we might do is read 33 and 34. If I could have a volunteer to read those two verses, and we'll read both of them and look at some of the similarities between them. Maybe look at some differences. So we could have a volunteer to read verses 31 and 32. And then after that, a volunteer for 33 and 34.
Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like to a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof.
He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour till it was all leavened. All these things Jesus said to the crowds in parables. Indeed, he said nothing to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter what has been hidden since the foundation of the world.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so if we look at these parables, what are some similarities between the two parables that were just read? We have the parable of the mustard seed and we have the parable of the yeast. First of all, what is the focus of the... Both of the parables have the same focus, and they both have some similarities, at least one similarity besides that. First of all, what's the focus of the parables? What are the parables referring to, in other words? Thank you. Okay. Is there other similarities between the two?
Both of them expanded.
Expansion is there is different ways of looking at these parables, I have noticed. What in our view, or in your view, or in our view, was Jesus trying to accomplish? What thoughts was he trying to provoke when he spoke these parables? So when you think of these parables, what comes to mind? Obviously, expansion comes to mind. That's something we've talked about. Is there anything else that comes to mind when you just think of these parables? Just right there, Ibra, go ahead.
The first thing that popped into my mind was it goes for humbleness and the lowly, those that are basically looked down upon, brings them into the fold and they grow into a mighty tree.
Okay, so we could sum that up as hope. Okay, Mike over here in the center.
I think of it as the power of the gospel. It starts off in both cases, it starts off with something almost insignificant, and it grows into something that's, you know, a world. It's a force to be reckoned with. It's huge.
Okay. Anything else?
I see influence. In the first one, it became something that the birds of the air benefited from, and in the second one, it was again influence that spread to everything around it.
Okay, influence. Anything else? When we think of the parable of the leaven. I think, if I'm not mistaken, this would be the only time in the scriptures, maybe, that leaven would be referred to as something positive, if it is referring to something positive. Is that correct, or is that false? Anybody want to comment on that? I think it's for that reason that some people, when they look at this parable, and I'll just share the view on that, and then you can comment, that it is referring to The leaven in the meal is referring to the corruption that's in the gospel. And that same you would be, because you see leaven as something bad throughout the Old Testament, they see leaven as a bad thing. Same you would apply it to the parable of the mustard seed. If we turn ahead, or just turn back a wee bit to the parable of the sower, the bird, who was the bird likened to? Who was the bird in the parable of the sower?
The one who stole the seed.
Okay, and who was that?
Obviously an enemy.
The devil. I think too. So they would see these parables as parables, the parable of the mustard seed again, and whether or not this parable is trying to display that, I think it is accurate. They just see that this parable is actually referring to it, where the gospel has become something that the enemy has actually taken. It nests in even the, whether or not everything that takes nest in the gospel is necessarily part. Not everything that takes nest in the, what we'll call it, the gospel, is necessarily part of the kingdom. And it talks about the birds taking. When we think of maybe nations or governments, maybe seeing the benefit of the values of the kingdom and nesting in there, but it's not necessarily that because they nest in those values, because they take shelter in the values, that they are necessarily part of that. Anybody wanting to comment on that? That's certainly not a view that I have heard. Not a view that we have had discussed in prior to nothing that we have in the board that pertains to that view. I think the two different views. The one where we think about all the things that are on the board, we think of hope and power and influence and expansion. It's a positive, positive view to the kingdom, whereas the other approach would be a more of a cautious view. And so it might speak to what we think when we think about the kingdom of God. Do we take a positive view, positive out? Maybe I don't like a positive and a negative. Don't like using those terms, but the latter would be more of a cautious outlook. So, what kind of an outlook do we have when we think of the kingdom of God? Do we have a positive, an exuberant outlook, or do we have a more of a cautious outlook toward what is happening in the kingdom? Do we see the kingdom expanding without any caution, or do we see in the expansion of the kingdom do we see corruption taking root in there? I was one of the Bible versions I was reading. It talked about the kingdom, the mustard seed being instead of being sown, a man took and sowed in his field. It talks about a mustard seed being cast out, and I couldn't really find any evidence that that would be more accurate in interpretation than being sown. But in the parable of the yeast, the way it's written, it says the woman took and hid in three measures of meal. It doesn't have, I don't think it's the language that would necessarily be used in general. Well, when we think of leaven, what do we think about? What is leaven? What do we think about when we think of leaven?
Something we need to, need to use in your baking bread.
Okay. Anything else?
It's something that grows and spreads.
Old Testament, they would eat on unleavened bread. Type of taking sin out.
So it's not something we need to make bread. It's something that is usually used to make bread. It's behind you, Abe.
Generally, in the Bible, when you read about it, it's kind of takes on the appearance of something infiltrating into a negative thing, infiltrating into something good and influencing it in a negative way.
Can you just repeat that?
Generally, what we see in the Bible is it's something negative infiltrating into something good. So, in other words, it gets mixed in with something. A bad thing getting mixed in with something good and influencing the good in a negative direction.
That's generally what it is. What it is referred to. It almost seems to me like when it says the woman took and hid in three measures of meal, she maybe had, like sometimes, she maybe took some, maybe a similar comparison would be if there's old food in the refrigerator, there's leftovers, and we mix it in with something. We don't want to throw it out, so we mix it in, we hide it in a casserole, and it can actually end up, if the food is bad, it can end up spoiling everything, not just what it actually spreads. And it seems to me that it almost leaves the thought of a woman trying to hide a piece of it's actually a sourdough is what it is, a piece of sourdough, and mixing it up just to get rid of it. And it can't be gotten rid of. It's just it's there, and When I think of this parable, when, well, we make cheese, and so I have a, if I have a 20-liter pail of milk, warm milk, and I drop in a pinch of culture into that pail, and maybe 3/4 of a milliliter of rennet, put it in there and mix it up, and it's been sometimes what's happened is if you're doing half a dozen pails full of milk and you mix that up, and all of a sudden you don't know. After it's in there, I think it's maybe an eighth of a teaspoon that I use for 20 liters of milk. And after it's in there and it's mixed up, you don't know. Did you put it into that pail? If you have 6 pails, did I put it into there or didn't I? And you have to keep track, because after it's in there, you can't see it. But after an hour or 2 hours, you can see which of the pails headed in there and which didn't. But it's always amazing when you think of 20 liters of milk and you put in just a pinch of something, how it grows and is able to influence the whole that volume. Any other thoughts on those two parables? I was interested a bit in the, does anybody know, well, does anybody have a mustard tree, maybe? I haven't seen one recently. Does anybody know how big a mustard tree is? A full-grown mustard tree? Or a mustard plant?
I'm not expert on it, but my mind immediately popped in approximately 10 feet tall. And it's a big butt on the top, and they call it a tree. I'm not sure. I just call it a plant, but it looks like a tree. So if there's somebody that knows better, I'm willing to listen.
And it might be a different, I'm not sure if it's the same thing that what this is, what they would have seen here and what you pictured. Might be the same thing, but one of the differences might be is you're not willing to let it grow long enough to see how big it'll get. And it might be a total different plant. But one of the things that, one of the characteristics also of mustard, I think, is that after it goes into seed and the seed spread on the ground, I think mustard seed, I've heard before that mustard seed can live in the ground up to, if it doesn't germinate, it can live into the ground up to 30 years. And still after that, it can still germinate. So that becomes, it becomes into something that is very hard to get rid of. It's nearly impossible to get rid of it because of the length of time. Only one mustard plant will produce so many seeds, and the seeds are able to live in the ground for so many years that it's a very difficult plant to eradicate. So whether or not we view in these parables, whether or not we view it as a positive influence or a negative influence, it is very hard to get rid of. Okay, so let's move on to the parable of the treasure in the field and the parable of the pearl. Maybe give it a volunteer to read both of those. Again, I think we'll compare them, look at the similarities, and see what we can learn. 44 and 45. Volunteer for that. Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 and 45. Go ahead, Eve.
Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls. When he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it.
So the focus is still on the kingdom of heaven, is that correct? What are the similarities between these two? They are back to back, and I find it interesting, they are very similar, and yet I personally feel that they contrast each other quite a bit as well. So what are the similarities? Anyone?
In both of them, just on a basic first glance, it's somebody finding something good, but they need to acquire it or they need to make a sacrifice for it, and they're willing to give everything in order to attain that thing which they see as being good.
So the similarities are that they're something of great value. So what are the contrasts in these two parables? Anyone? Okay, so what is the... Let's look at the first one. What is the kingdom likened to in the first parable? The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure. And what is the treasure doing? The treasure is hiding. In the next parable, it is like a merchant. And what is the merchant doing?
Searching.
Do you see the contrast? One that is hiding, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that is hiding. And it is also like a treasure that is seeking. That's interesting. So we have similarities. Both are of great value. One, it is hiding, and one, it is seeking. Let's think about that great value for a wee bit. What determines the value of something? See, I have a fist-sized block of concrete or a stone, and I have that same size or weight, same equivalent weight in gold. Which has more value? Maybe a silly question. But what determines the value of those two? it's a cold day outside, I have one or the other. One doesn't provide more warmth than the other does. If I'm hungry, one doesn't provide more nutrition. So what determines the value?
Whatever anybody's willing to pay for it or sacrifice for it.
Thank you.
I would say what's more useful and more rare, like gold is much more useful than that rock. You can take gold and hammer an ounce. And I understand the cathedrals in some of the old, in Europe, they might take a few ounces of gold and hammer it so thin they can cover many, 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 many items within that building, like the walls and or whatever, parts of it. And a stone, you just grind it to powder and it'd be dust and be gone.
So the usefulness of something and what somebody is willing to give for it. Those are two things that would determine a value. Anything else?
Well, people don't necessarily realize which one has the most value. For instance, talking about the kingdom of heaven, or talking about the gold and the stone, or even like today, the Bitcoin is worth so much, or people are going nuts over that. What's making that worth anything? It's really nothing. So it's not in a... I'm not sure if it makes sense what I'm saying, but really, people don't necessarily get it right.
Does anybody know of, you probably do, what's the value, maybe we should ask Paul, you're into the seed business, what's the value of a tulip bulb? Half a dollar. Does anybody know the story behind the tulip bulb and the value of a tulip bulb? There's, I think in the 1600s, and I think it's been referred to many times, but in the 1600s, I think it was in maybe in Holland, the tulip bulb became I think it was similar to what you shared there, Phil, but something that was sought after. And the wealthy, it became so rare, and the wealthy sought after tulip bulbs, very rare. I'm not sure what caused a tulip bulb to be rare and of value, but it rose into a mountain. The value rose on tulip bulbs just before its crash, but at the peak of that market, the rarest tulip bulb was, depending on the sources you look at, but the rarest tulip bulb was worth 6 to 10 times a man's annual salary. And if, just think about your own salary for a year and multiply that times 6 or 10. Would you be willing to give that for a tulip bulb? Just like Phil said, people don't necessarily get it right. It comes down to the value being whatever someone is willing to sacrifice or pay for it, that becomes the value. But it can change. And maybe that isn't the value. But these parables do that somewhat. It is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in his field. In his excitement, he hid it again and sold everything he owned to get enough money to buy the field. So it's very interesting. If he would have dug it up to keep it, he couldn't have done that because it would have been, he was only a servant in the field at that time, so it would have been his master's treasure. So he hid it again and bought the field, and then it was his. So if we think about the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered in his field. And if it is like a merchant, so if we don't, okay, so now we have a treasure and a pearl, but we haven't determined what is this pearl, what is it like. See, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure and it is like a merchant, but what about the pearl? In our own minds, what do we see the pearl to be like? What is it referring to?
I'm thinking of the verse, what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Basically, this person gave up everything to get this pearl because he knew the value of it. That's what I'm reading into this.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
What I get out of this, our earthly treasures mean nothing compared to the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Just makes me think of where Jesus said, if you're not willing to forsake all, you can't be a disciple. They were willing to give everything up for the kingdom.
In this case, though, I think what we've covered so far, it only refers to the first part of the two parables. In this case, it is the kingdom of heaven being the merchant, and it is the merchant that is giving everything up to obtain.
So what you're saying is Jesus gave everything up to purchase us.
I think so. And if we incorporate that with the value, we can expound on the value of the kingdom of heaven. We say the kingdom of heaven is worth so much. We can expound on that at great length. And how much is it worth? To the merchant, It is worth everything he owned. That's how much it's worth to him. And to the man that discovered the treasure, it was worth everything to him. But whatever, it comes down to the value being whatever somebody is willing to sacrifice. So, great expounding on the value of the kingdom of heaven is somewhat useless, I think. The value of the kingdom is determined by what we are willing to sacrifice for it.
I'm probably not understanding you, but I don't necessarily agree with that statement. Whether we think so or not, the value of the kingdom of heaven is that it will save our lives. And a lot of people scoff at that, think they don't need it, but they really do. So the value of the kingdom of heaven, I think, is it's greater than anything on earth.
Right along with that, if the parable is actually talking about Jesus being the merchant, the value of is determined by what the merchant is willing to give for it.
Can you repeat that?
From what you said, the man looking for the pearls and the one who bought the field could represent Christ and giving up everything. So the pearl and the treasure is determined by what the merchant was willing to give for it.
And you believe that to be inaccurate?
I think it makes it awesome.
I'll take some more comments.
In the case of the treasure hidden in the field, the treasure is the kingdom of heaven is the treasure. So in that one, it's establishing the value of the kingdom of heaven, the value of salvation. And it indicates that it's worth everything that we have or can possibly come up with. In the case of the merchant, if the merchant if Christ is the merchant, that's indicating what the value that Christ puts on us, not the kingdom of heaven. The value that Christ places on my soul, my one soul. Now, what I couldn't help but notice that in talking about the value of the kingdom of heaven, it doesn't matter how valuable it is, I can't afford it by myself anyway. Without the merchant seeking for my soul, I can't get it. It's just, it might be worth that, but I can't afford to pay it. I haven't got the revenue to buy it. Unless the merchant, or Christ himself, is also seeking for my soul at the same time.
Anyone else?
Thinking of value here, something that really stands out to me is when I think of Jesus, he gave everything for us. So if you really think of that, you don't pay a high price for something of no value. And if the kingdom of heaven is a treasure, it must be extremely valuable, which requires a life of full surrender in order to enter there. So to us, it is a matter of what's more valuable to us and what do we want out of life, right? What are we willing to give for something that is valuable?
On one hand, we can say that it's free, that salvation is free, costs nothing. On the other hand, is it wrong to say that salvation costs everything? I think if we take the words of Jesus seriously, I don't think one statement is more accurate than the other. And you're welcome to disagree with me on that one as well. That's okay. Anybody else want to comment on anything? Let's just, because we're in Matthew 13, take a brief look at the next one, the parable of the fishing net. Somebody read from 47 to 50. Volunteer for that.
Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was thrown into the sea and gathered fish of every kind. When it was full, men drew it ashore and sat down and sorted the good into the containers, but threw away the bad. So it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come out and separate the evil from the righteous and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
I find it interesting, the contrasts between the parables. First, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that is hiding. Next, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant that is seeking. And it is seeking specifically for a choice pearl. And then in this parable, we have it being like a fishing net, just being dragged through the waters and just mass accumulation. It's interesting to me to look at the kingdom of heaven, at these parables, and see how they contrast. And how can it be that a kingdom of heaven is like a merchant that is out just looking for specifics, but it is also like a net that's being dragged through the waters and just doing mass accumulation. And after the mass accumulation, then there is separation between the good and the bad. It's thought-provoking. Any comments on this here or anything that we've discussed so far?
That fish net thing is a typical way of emphasizing what they will do in the last days. There will not one soul be missed that craves and desires and longs after the kingdom of heaven, believes in Jesus Christ, not one soul. But the others will all be cast out without even a glance. To me, it is very open and specific, that last parable, of what they mean. If I'd have words to really explain myself.
It can be looked at that way, that the whole parable is referring to the last days, or it can be referred to that the separation. If you read that carefully, you could come up with the two conclusions that... One, you could conclude that the whole parable is talking about the last days, or you could read that it is the separation that will take place in the last days. Either or, I don't think is would be out of the reading scope of this parable. If anybody has any comments, go ahead. I think we will close shortly. After these things, after Matthew chapter 13 here, after these parables, and it might just be, he might be referring to this parable in itself, but I think maybe he's referring to a broader, the whole course of conversation that he had there. He asked his disciples, do you understand these things? He said, yes, we do. And then he added, every teacher of the religious law who becomes a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like a homeowner who brings from his storeroom new chimes as well as the old. That's somewhat of a parable in itself there. And I don't think we'll comment too much on that. Wondered about their statement when they said, yes, they do, how much they understood. They maybe thought they understood, but there's many things that Jesus told his disciples fairly plainly. He told his disciples plainly that about his death, resurrection on the cross, but when it happened, they and he had told them plainly enough that that he would die and be risen on the third day. That the Pharisees, the scribes and the Pharisees, they believed it enough that they put a guard to his tomb. And so that the disciples wouldn't steal his body. So Jesus had spoken plainly enough what was going to happen, but it seemed that his disciples hadn't understood it almost as well as what the scribes and the Pharisees were. I was wondering, when he said that, yes, they do understand, and yet, before, Jesus had told them, blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. Are you still planning to do next week, Abe? If you would give him the mic, then he could tell us what we're going to look into next week.